Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Fourth quarter here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, we'd like to start with Thursday Night Football, the matchup between the Chiefs and the Chargers. It gave us a thriller in overtime, and of course Kansas City came out on the winning side of it. But we got to talk about what's going on with the NFL and the impact of COVID. Obviously, the Cleveland Browns game, we talked about, you know, the issues that Baker Mayfield spouted off with on the social media on Twitter yesterday, and it seems like he got his wish because the NFL has postponed the game between the Las Vegas Raiders and the Cleveland Browns, moving that to Monday, and that's a part of three games that the NFL has moved from this weekend into next week. The other two being the Los Angeles Rams and the Seattle Seahawks, which is moved to Tuesday, as well as the Washington football team and the Philadelphia Eagles. They're going to play on Tuesday night as well. So it's tough to kind of digest and process all of this information. But in this instance, the NFL is trying to make adjustments in real time. And it's clear that they felt like it was in the best interest of all involved if they actually move these regular season games.
Yeah, Commissioner Roger Goodell sent out a memo to all 32 teams, and the top-lined article on this, the number one bullet point, is we will make every effort consistent with underlying health and safety principles to play our full schedule within the current 18 weeks. So, Chris, I think that tells you a lot about the mentality of the league down the stretch here. They were willing to be flexible here and understood that this is a severe instance where you've got the Washington football team with up over 20 guys in the COVID-19 list, the Browns not far behind them, the Los Angeles Rams certainly in the tens, but their goal and their charge, as it's been from the beginning, is to get this thing done on time and get them to a normally scheduled postseason.
And one of the things that we were talking about in wondering is whether or not there was a minimum threshold or maximum threshold that the NFL would have in terms of the number of players that would go on a reserve COVID list for a specific team, and then also breaking it down even further and going to specific position groups and how that impacts the team's overall ability to be competitive in these games that are supposed to go off. Because the NFL is ultimately an entertainment product, and if you're bringing guys off of the street, guys off of practice squads that haven't had the opportunity to play meaningful snaps in the season, and they're being forced into duty, how good are these games going to be for the public that's supposed to be consuming them, for your actual audience? So that's something that you have to consider. There's also the player safety aspect of it, because if you're talking about guys that haven't necessarily played a lot of football this season, then how are they going to adjust to the speed of the game, and are you putting other guys in harm's way because those guys, from a talent standpoint or for a competitive standpoint, don't belong on the field? So I think those are all conversations that have merit to them, but ultimately the NFL made the call that whatever losses that they're going to incur as a result of postponing these games, we're going to have to be something that they'll live with, because the alternative, which is actually trying to fit these games in as scheduled, didn't seem like it would be plausible.
No, and this came after a number of outcries from current players, Baker Mayfield and others, that pointed to just what you said, that player safety element. I'll never forget Mike Tomlin when I was in training camp with the Steelers. Anytime you'd see guys, young guys, on the ground in practice in drills, be just yelling out constantly, "Don't trip the athletes." Like, that is what you can get when you've got a bunch of guys out there that don't know what the hell they're doing, that just got pulled off the street or practice squad. And so that's a real concern that, listen, I would like to believe the NFL takes seriously, and we know at its core, everything around COVID-19 and the pandemic is a player health and safety issue in addition to all the league personnel. But Chris, you and I know this, you know, too well at this point to assume that this was just a decision made with player safety in mind. And Marcus brought this up, something they talked about on NFL Live today. It's a tough moving target, because where does it stop right now? If you get, let's say, members of the opposing team, members of the Las Vegas Raiders playing that Browns team, who now all of a sudden, in the couple of days in between after it's been postponed, that come down with COVID and aren't going to be ready. Do you move the game again? Certainly that's probably not something that's on the table, but that's going to be the competitive disadvantage that I'm sure, if it comes up, will be the outcry of a lot of players.
Well, the last thing the NFL wants to do is be in a spot where they're forced to cancel games, right? And we mentioned it, you don't have any bye weeks till the rest of to the end of the regular season. So there isn't but so much flexibility that the NFL has in terms of being able to move these games. and get all of them in. And so I think what they're doing right now from an optics standpoint is the first step in terms of trying to exhaust all possibilities, all measures in order to protect the integrity of the schedule and make sure that you do have a chance to be able to play these games to satisfy your media partners, your television partners, and then be able to have these owners generate as much revenue as they can from concessions in game day, game day stadium revenue. So I think that's a part of it. But like I said, Gojo, I think this is just the first step. I think something that you floated earlier this week, a conversation that's being had in quiet corners around the NFL is, are we going to get to the point where we just accept the fact that we're going to have players that are out there playing that have positive COVID tests? Like, are we going to accept vaccinated players that have been boosted that are asymptomatic being on the field competing in the National Football League? I think the first step was postponement because you're giving guys a chance to come back and test negative. But I think if this continues to go down this path and you continue to see similar outbreaks at other clubs, I think that conversation, the volume around that is going to get a lot louder, and that could open the door to the possibility. And so I think this is the NFL owners being preemptive, saying, we'll meet the NFLPA on this one when it comes to postponing these specific games because you have such high numbers of guys on the reserve COVID list. But I think as we get down the road, if the NFL is faced with a decision of a cancellation versus allowing asymptomatic players that are vaccinated to play to, in order to get games in, I think that's something that they would ultimately consider.
Yeah, and I think that's an important distinction that you make there, Chris, because we saw Bruce Arians, the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, come out and say as much, that he believes that could be a place where this all goes. And it's a fine line because we know as we talk about all this, the way that the league has already loosened up the return to play policies surrounding COVID with vaccinated players, that it's not always as simple as, oh, well, now they're all going to be able to come back. Some of these guys, if they continue to test positive, will not be able to test out. Some of them are actually going to deal with this. It's not just false positives that we're talking about here. And I saw Diana Rossini tweet about this. There are some guys that are actually struggling with symptoms, and that is going to be a part of this. And so, Chris, ultimately, when that decision comes down about how they're going to approach that and how much they want to loosen this up, it's going to be the same goal that it was at the beginning, not just for pro football, but for everyone in the pandemic, is can we do that while still protecting the most vulnerable parts of our population? Because we know inside NFL buildings, whether it's in the equipment room, whether it's on the medical staff or in the training room or in the coaching staff, there are those that are at risk. And we have seen that, again, the vaccine is here to help prevent hospitalization, to try and prevent the worst of this. But as we get variants and as you get even the crews and the people that are mandated to be vaccinated as a part of this, there's still some risk for the older population. And that's the group the NFL is going to have to continue to keep top of mind in all of this the way they did at the beginning.
That's how it should work, Gojo, but we know that's not how the NFL gets down and how they do business. The bottom line is the most important thing. That's going to be top priority. And so when it comes to exactly what's going to be done, what's going to happen, it's going to be dictated by, you know, the profits. It's going to be dictated by making sure that they can do everything that they can to minimize the losses and the financial impact that this new outbreak with COVID, with the new variant, could create. And so I think that's one of those things where if you do have people that are vulnerable populations, if they're working as support staff, if they're coaches, if they're medical staff, if they're strength and conditioning staff, like that's going to be something where the NFL has to have that conversation with these respective clubs and decide whether or not those individuals are going to be allowed to do their jobs because they don't want to put them in harm's way, but at the same time, they don't want to lose the opportunity to get all of these games in. And so I think that's something that would be considered, but ultimately the decision is going to hinge on what's in the best interest of the profit margin for the leagues, for the owners. That's how I see this thing, and that's why I think this is an important step to note because it feels like the owners are trying to meet the players on this one. But if things continue to devolve, if this continues to, you know, to spread, then I think you have to have a different conversation and consider allowing asymptomatic players on the field that have been vaccinated.
Yeah, Chris, you mentioned the owners meeting the players halfway on this one and the cries that there's a competitive advantage issue now with the guys and the teams that have gone and operated and handled their business the right way. We saw this play out in college football with the extra year of COVID eligibility rewarded to players affected by this. That's now had a trickle-down effect on high school kids, fewer of them having roster spots to go. There's always going to be someone that loses out because the enemy that you're fighting here does not care about the sport you're playing. The enemy you're fighting here is a virus that's constantly changing and moving. And so I understand the frustration from some players. There's not going to be a right answer in this. There's going to be what we think we can do best here and now as the NFL and the rest of the leagues and pro sports try to adjust to these changes as the COVID-19 pandemic continues to evolve. Coming up next, though, we know how this has affected one team in the NBA with the Brooklyn Nets. Kyrie Irving has been absent so far this season. Why and how that may change next here on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Fourth quarter here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Mike, it feels like Kyrie Irving is going to start getting some part-time love from the Brooklyn Nets because it sounds like the all-star guard is going to be on his way back to his former, to his current team. It seems the unfolding circumstances of Brooklyn's season, including the injuries, players lost to health and safety protocols, and an inordinate minutes load on their superstar players led the team to this move, sources said. So this is a Woj bomb that we got in the middle of our show. Kyrie Irving is rejoining the Brooklyn Nets. He's going to practice with them at home, but he won't be allowed to play in home games, only going to be allowed to play in the road games. And we know that this is something that the Brooklyn Nets have been resistant to. But based on what's happened to their team, guys being out because of COVID, this is the conclusion that they had to come to.
I mean, is anyone really surprised? Chris, are you all that surprised on this? Because I figured back when this was all going down earlier this fall, I believe right in the end of the summer, when the Nets took this stand and said we weren't going to have someone around the organization part-time and everyone lauded them for doing this, I always felt like talent would will out in this situation, right? That in the NBA especially, where the talent so inordinately affects the outcome because there's only five guys on the court, eventually this dude was going to find his way back because this team was going to be so good. And lo and behold, that's kind of where we are, right? The Nets are a first-place team in the East, or usually on any given day near that spot. And now they've got the luxury of saying, all right, we can do this for depth because, hell, what's one more guy in and out of the lineup in a year where we've already had so many with COVID?
Well, yeah, it makes sense just because you realize what Kevin Durant is doing right now isn't sustainable. And you know you're going to need that guy in order to accomplish your ultimate goal, which is winning a championship. Like, you can't ask KD to play 40 minutes and average a triple-double, which is essentially what he's been doing the last couple of weeks with all of the guys that they've had out of the lineup, including James Harden. So this is an opportunity to get KD some relief, albeit only in half the games, only the road games. But this is something that they had to do, man. Being able to bring in somebody like Kyrie that's instant offense, that can be your primary ball handler if James Harden happens to be out of the lineup for any reason. Like, this is something that they needed to do. So I get it. I like the move, although I don't like the Brooklyn Nets coming off of the principle that they established early on in the season. You realize the desperation that they had in going this direction because they're contradicting themselves. But one of the things that I think is interesting to watch with this, Gojo, is what happens with Kyrie Irving as he does come back. Because I do think there still is a conversation to be had about whether or not the Brooklyn Nets are better off trading Kyrie Irving and seeing what they could bring back. I think that's something that would probably interest the organization. I'm not quite sure what that does in terms of changing James Harden's mind and getting him to lock in long-term with the organization and sign that long-term contract. But we know Kevin Durant is here for the long haul. And we also know that Kevin Durant is here because Kyrie Irving was the one to pull him along in free agency a couple of years ago. This is a situation where you would need KD to sign off on it. But I don't know that what we've seen from Kyrie in the last couple of years with the Brooklyn Nets wouldn't push KD to want to see if he could find somebody that would be more reliable in the way of helping him compete for championships. Because you know it's always going to be up and down with Kyrie Irving. He's demonstrated that at every stop in his NBA career. And for a player like Kevin Durant that's obsessed with enhancing his legacy and being considered one of the greatest of all time, I mean, winning a championship would go a long ways to doing that, and having some consistency with the supporting cast to help you do that is going to be essential. So I'm not quite sure that Kyrie Irving in this return is not something that doesn't open the door for the Brooklyn Nets to eventually move on for him.
Yeah, I think that would be the smartest thing for them to do because, Chris, I think everyone in this looked around and kind of realized how tenuous this situation is with this team, right? When they originally came over here, when Brooklyn got out here, did what they did in building up the culture around that team in order to lure these star players in, I'm sure they thought they had their big three set for the next however many years and this was going to be all gold. And then all of a sudden, Kyrie Irving last year being in and out, disappearing randomly during the season, not giving his team reasons. You mentioned James Harden's tepid response this preseason, talking about his future with the team. I think everyone involved kind of saw, all right, Kevin Durant's going to be here, but this iteration of the team that we thought we were going to be able to count on for a while might only be here, so we got to make while the getting's good. And that's probably this in the basketball sense. Like, if it works out to give them some part-time relief right now, that's great. But to maximize Kyrie's trade value and get him out of there, if that opportunity presents itself, to me, that is the overwhelming best option that could come out of this. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it makes all the sense in the world, right? Let's get Kyrie Irving down the turnpike to the Philadelphia 76ers and bring over Ben Simmons. Like, let's see what that does. Let's see if that would work.
Man, I don't know. Like, all right, listen, they've been messy already. I don't know if they're ready to court that mess coming right off this. Like, get you someone nice and stable. Like, maybe this is finally where the Dame thing happens. Can we do the Dame thing here? That'd be great.
Is Kyrie Irving for Dame, is that enough?
Who knows? If I'm Brooklyn, that's enough. That is enough to get some. Like, because, I mean, think about it. Like, do you want to really go out here and court Ben Simmons? I get you get a little more longevity out of this because he's young, and maybe because you've got such potent scorers there, you could find a way to make that work. But, man, it's been so messy, and part of me would just like to have someone in the room that I know I can rely on at this point.
Yeah, you want to be able to have an adult in the room if you're getting rid of somebody that's showing a level of immaturity that Kyrie has. So I get you, and that's probably what Kevin Durant is thinking. It's like, listen, we need more help on this roster. We need another all-star caliber player if Kyrie is only going to be a part-timer. So maybe we need to try to find a way to make that happen, especially before the trade deadline this year, knowing that it's going to be a haul to try to get back to the NBA Finals out of the Eastern Conference. So we'll end up seeing what happens with that. But I think that should be a possibility that the Brooklyn Nets explore as we continue to move through the NBA season. Coming up next, on the plus side, would you rather take these NFL underdogs this weekend? We'll have that up on deck for you. But first, we got a word from Man in the Arena. Now, you guys already know I'm the unofficial spokesman for Man in the Arena. Not only the docuseries, but the podcast. I love it. It's one of the most entertaining things out there in terms of consuming content. So you got to get into it if you haven't already. Join host Gotham Chopra as he explores what Tom Brady has meant to football and the world in Man in the Arena, a new podcast from ESPN Plus and Religion of Sports. A companion piece to Gotham's ESPN Plus docuseries, this 10-part podcast examines the improbable ripple effects of Brady's career. Things that have forced us to rethink everything we thought we knew about time, hatred, perfection, even fate. The podcast is brought to you by State Farm, ZipRecruiter, and Rocket Mortgage. Listen and follow Man in the Arena now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and stream the docuseries on ESPN+. You're listening to Canty and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio, ESPN+.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN+. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr. and at ChrisCanty99 because we got an incredible slate of games in Week 15 in the National Football League. And this weekend preview is brought to you by GEICO. Whether you rent or own, GEICO makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to GEICO.com today. And so, Gojo, because we like to break down all the NFL games on the slate, I feel like this is the time that we got to maybe take a look at some underdogs that have the potential to be able to pull off the upset or at the very least be able to cover the number. So I guess we've got to introduce another segment that we like to call On the Plus Side.
Yes, it is that time here on the Plus Side. Shout out to our friends and family at ESPN Plus. We love you. You should too. Go ahead and subscribe to ESPN Plus. Get you some of this fine content. But as we look at this slate, Chris, I want to start off with a game that we talked about earlier, looking at the dogs this weekend. The New England Patriots. I was shocked. In a world where we saw the Kansas City Chiefs as road favorites out in Los Angeles, the Patriots find themselves 2.5-point dogs on the road in Indianapolis. Is this one as easy for you as going ahead and saying the best team in football continues to find a way to win?
Yeah, it's that simple to me. And both of these teams feast off of takeaways. They're both top three in turnover margin, so that's going to be a huge component to determine whether or not the Patriots are going to be able to finish this game off and actually keep their win streak alive. And that's why I say it's going to come down to the quarterback play. Like, do I trust Mac Jones to not make the critical mistakes more so than Carson Wentz? And the answer to that question is yes, Gojo. And even though Carson Wentz is a more talented quarterback, I trust Mac Jones more just because I know the game is not going to be put on Mac Jones' shoulders. And Bill Belichick demonstrated that in the game that they won against the Buffalo Bills a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah, I'm going to take the Patriots, and I'll take the 2.5 points. I think they're going to win outright. This line was at 3 points yesterday, so some money coming in on the New England Patriots. I feel like they continue to take care of their business. They make it, what, 8 in a row? I think that's what we're going to be talking about.
Chris, I like the 2.5 of the Patriots, but I think the Colts get this win. I think you mentioned the quarterback that's the least likely to make a mistake. I'm going to go with the one that I trust to make plays. And I've seen Carson Wentz able to do that this season. He's taken better care of the football overall. We know there's been some of those hilariously bad instances like we saw earlier in the year on Monday Night Football. But I think Frank Reich has started to reel this in the way we thought. And when he's not been dealing with COVID, and now that he's been getting healthier, remember, this is a quarterback that had multiple ankle injuries during the course of the season. I think he's going to be able to make the couple of big plays that start to stress this Patriots offense in a way they haven't so far. I like the Pats with the points, but I think the Colts get this win. What's the next game we got?
Texans and Jaguars.
You like how I throw that out there and then I get away from it quickly, very afraid of being wrong and doubting Bill Belichick?
Yeah, I see that. I see that. You rolled up off of that one pretty quickly. But in this matchup,
the Colts,
go ahead.
Go for it.
No, I was just going to say, in the matchup with the AFC South teams, man, I'm going to go with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I know that seems like it's crazy, but the veil has been lifted in Jacksonville. They got rid of Urban Meyer. And you know how that can kind of hang over a team where they have a head coach that doesn't have a whole lot of credibility in the locker room and doesn't have a whole lot of respect from the players or the staff members. And so removing that from that team, I think they go out there and you see a spirited effort from them under interim coach Daryl Bevel. I think they go out there and get this thing done, man. I mean, a lot of complaints about what Urban Meyer did down there, and you heard players being very vocal about it. I think they get energized by the addition by subtraction that Shad Khan made at the head coach spot this week. So I like the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm not messing with the Texans, even though they're getting 4.5 points.
Oh, Chris, there wouldn't be a big enough number in the game for me to go against Jacksonville in this game. Jags by 1,000 in this one. You saw everyone involved in this completely light up when they got to talk about life after that. I mean, hell, Daryl Bevel, when asked about the prospect that he could have more wins in the interim as the head coach did while he was here, went full Jim Halpert from The Office and just kind of stared into the camera and tried not to break the smile that he was hiding underneath here. So I think Jacksonville runs away and hides with this thing. And let me pray to any God who will listen that we start to get to see the Trevor Lawrence that I believe is still firmly there and has been squandered so far. Canny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio on the plus side, taking a look at some dogs for the upcoming weekend. What do we got next?
Seahawks and Rams.
All right, Seattle +4 at Los Angeles against the Rams. Chris, we know this is one of the games that was affected by COVID so far this season, and I'm trying to pull this up right now because I saw an insane stat about what we've seen in the NFC West so far this season, and I haven't been able to find it yet. And so, all right, here we go. This season, underdogs in the NFC West are 7-2 against the spread and outright this season. This is the chaos division in football. That being said, Chris, I think the Rams are starting to figure it out right now. I think Seattle's in a tailspin, and I'll take the Rams and I'll lay the points.
Yeah, no Jamal Adams. It's hard for me to buy into what Seattle's doing. I get it. They're a desperate team. But the Rams are desperate too because they're trying to compete with the Arizona Cardinals for NFC West supremacy. They still think that they have an opportunity to win the division. And when you look at their remaining schedule, this is one of those games that they've got to take care of their business in if they're going to have a chance at being able to wear that division crown. So I think this is a spot where they take care of their business, and it's not as close as the typical games that we see between these two teams.
So, reminder, that game also postponed and moved to Tuesday, one of the COVID transplants from this season. Let's get one more in here. What do we got?
Packers and Ravens.
All right, Chris, Baltimore, 6.5-point dogs playing Green Bay at home here. We know this is one Lamar Jackson likely going to be a game-time decision, or at least coming down to the wire here. Who do you like?
I like the Green Bay Packers, so I couldn't mess with my Baltimore Ravens. Even though it's 6.5, I still don't feel good about that because I think that it's going to be Tyler Huntley under center as opposed to Lamar Jackson. We saw that number was around 5, 5.5 yesterday, and now it's at 6.5 today. I feel like it's trending in that direction because public sentiment understands that Lamar Jackson most likely won't play in this game. So we're not breaking news, but I'm just saying that's the way it feels like based on how Vegas is setting the number. So I'm going to go with the Green Bay Packers. I don't think this is one of those spots where we're going to see one of those upsets, although I would love to see it because I'm a former Baltimore Raven and I got a lot of love for John Harbaugh and that organization.
Yeah, no, Chris, totally understand, and I'm with you. I think this is the way it's all tracking. But just looking at matchups here, like sometimes it can be as simple as major strength on glaring weakness. The Baltimore secondary is decimated by injury. They put a ton of stress on that unit to try and hold up in the way Wink Martindale wants to run defense. And on the other side, you got Aaron Bleeping Rodgers, Devontae Adams, and what this passing attack has looked like at certain points. I think it's Green Bay. I don't really think much about it, and I never look back on that. This is going to be about Baltimore getting right, getting Lamar Jackson healthy, and figuring out some answers in their passing attack for the home stretch of this season. All right, on the plus side here on Canty and Golic Jr., get your pockets right for the upcoming weekend. But coming up next, it has been a lot of tough news today on the COVID front in the NFL. So coming up next, we will hit you with some of the best news that we could have possibly asked for here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appeared via the Goodyear Hotline, and we got to shout out the guests that came through on today's show. Grambling State head football coach Hugh Jackson kind of giving us a heads up on the Celebration Bowl and what he's got going on down there in the SWAC. I'm excited about what Deion Sanders is doing at Jackson State as well, so we thought that certainly deserves credit and deserves a mention. Trey Flowers, outside linebacker for the Detroit Lions, and then Marcus Spears, ESPN NFL analyst. If you missed any of it, go to the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast, download, rate, and subscribe. We greatly appreciate it. But, Mike, we have now reached the portion of our show where it's time for us to go three and out.
Sometimes it's the worst. Sometimes it's the best. Either way, we'll get you straight with everything you need to know. This is three and out.
Hit him with the damn remix, Renee. It's three and out, brought to you by Indeed. High speed to high quality candidates. Visit Indeed.com/credit. And Chris, last night was an exciting football game that had a really scary start. Everyone saw the instance where Chargers tight end Donald Parham Jr. landed awkwardly in the end zone, appeared to hit his head off the ground, and almost immediately went limp. He was carted off and taken to a local hospital for further evaluation. And we've seen messages now posted by him and the update that he has been diagnosed with a concussion, will be evaluated further. He posted on his Instagram story a message saying, "I'm all good, everybody. You know nothing can hold a real one down, but I appreciate all the love and support from everyone. It means so much to me and my family to know so many people are thinking about me and my well-being." So, Chris, really good to see him doing well right now. Obviously, this football season for him is going to be about resting, recovering, and just trying to get back to a place where he can go and operate day-to-day normally and comfortably.
Yeah, that's great news for Donald Parham. I'm glad that it's just a concussion. I mean, I'm not saying that to make light of it, but we all know how serious those can be. But I'm glad that it's not something that's worse than that, because that was a scary scene at the beginning of that Thursday night football game. And it's just one of those things that reminds you of your mortality if you're a football player. And I'm sure a lot of those guys on the field on both teams in that moment were a little bit shook. So I'm glad that this is a story that has a happy ending. But, Gojo, I got to say one thing about this. During the broadcast of that game, and I hate to go after announcers, what the hell was Joe Buck talking about in terms of Donald Parham's arm shaking while he was on the stretcher saying that it was cold in SoFi Stadium? Why did he go out there and say that? We know that his arms weren't shaking because it was cold. What the hell is he talking about?
Man, it's such a tough spot, and you and I have both gotten to call games before, so at times there's things you can't prepare for, but in those spots, and listen, Joe Buck's done this for a long time. I'm sure in an honest moment that's one he'd want back, but less is more in a lot of those spots.
Yeah,
it is a difficult situation to try and work through there, and you never want to say we don't like to speculate and then speculate. So, again, I know those guys are a great crew. They were doing the best.
Joe Buck
is
a Hall of Famer.
He's
the best. They're the best. They do an awesome job. But just in that moment, it was just like, come on, bro. Come on.
Yeah, we don't got to do it like that, man.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't got to do it like that. So, everyone, just keep temperature checks to yourself sometime. We are happy to hear this, though, for Parham and his family, his loved ones, and for that team that, like you said, was certainly shook up on the sideline trying to watch one of their brothers go through that situation. Ken Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio going 3 and Out. How about this? A ticket stub from Michael Jordan's NBA debut sells for a record $264,000. Chris,
ooh.
I know if you got $264,000 to spend on this, I get it's not really hurting you like that, but a ticket stub? Like, it's not a signed card. It's not an NFT. It's not anything game-worn here. It's a ticket stub. Like, what are we doing?
I don't even understand that. It's not like Michael Jordan signed the ticket stub, so it's just like one of those things. Like, why do you feel like you needed to spend that amount of money on something like that? I mean, I'd rather have an autographed sneaker, an autographed jersey, something, but a ticket stub, bro? I don't know if I could go there, Gojo. I could think of a lot of other ways to spend $250,000.
I'm just saying, if you got $250,000 to spend on a ticket stub, like, go fight hunger or do something else here. Like, man, I'm good for wealthy extravagance at times, but a ticket stub? I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't get down with that
Yeah,
one.
Yeah, not That's at all. Not even a little bit. Not even
now,
a little bit.
Let's go to a comparatively more important headline here. 4-star wide receiver, DeColdis to Evaduet Crawford, commits to Nebraska over LSU. Chris, I'm not sure in this day and age if this is his government name or not. A lot of websites and a lot of team bios will put your nicknames on there if you so choose. But I am going to live every day from here on out believing in my heart that he got home from the hospital and was given that name and has lived with it ever since and is now going to try and live up with it for the Cornhuskers.
No, Gojo, I think his name is DeColdis. Now, to ever do it part, I'm not sure about. But DeColdis Crawford, I think that's his actual name, man. And so going from LSU, going from the Bayou to Lincoln, Nebraska, like, he's going to be the coldest, literally and figuratively, because the temperature change is going to be an adjustment for bruh. I'm telling you this, like, going out there to Lincoln, Nebraska in the Midwest, that is not one of those places from a temperature standpoint that is going to be easy to get used to. So the coldest, I feel you. You're following your position coach out there, the receivers coach, making that move. But, bruh, it's going to – this is an adjustment, not just from a cultural standpoint, but from a temperature standpoint, and I hope you're ready for it.
Oh, man.
DeColdis.
At ChrisCandy99, at Mike Golick Jr. is where you can get at us on the Dr. Pepper hotline for more reactions to DeColdis to ever do it. But you mentioned the boot. I'm going to get ready and go right now. Keep prepping for the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl. Shameless plug to watch Louisiana versus Marshall. 9:15 Eastern on ESPN tomorrow night. You can also listen to the great crew on ESPN Radio for all of that and the coverage here of bowl season on ESPN. Coming up next, though, keep it here on ESPN Radio. Spain and Fitz got you guys covered next.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.